KSDP 830 AM Sandpoint, K201DA King Cove, KFPS False Pass.
We will not be taking phone calls or emails during today's program.
Good morning, Alaska, and welcome to Line 1, your health connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. When any animal, humans included, perceive a threat, the automatic response is defensiveness. We are hardwired to protect ourselves when we feel threatened in some way. According to John Gottman, defensiveness in relationships serves as self-protection in the form of righteous indignation or innocent victimhood in an attempt to ward off a perceived attack. In intimate partner relationships, defensiveness leads to partners feeling unheard, blamed, and invalidated. Today's guest, Lisa Merlot-Booth, is an expert on the destructive power of defensiveness and its impact on relationships. She's joining us today to explain why defensiveness is so destructive and to share some tips on how we can all recognize and manage our own defensive tendencies. Thanks for joining us today, Lisa. Appreciate you taking the time out to come in.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, I need to remind listeners that today's episode is pre-recorded and we will not be able to accept listener phone calls or emails. All right, Lisa, I guess let's get us started by giving us a little bit about your background and training and what you're doing professionally and where you are. You're out east, right?
I am. I'm in Massachusetts. Although I am a native Floridian, so this okay. Massachusetts, like, cold, you know. So my training initially was in therapy. So I have a master's degree in counseling psych. And then, you know, along the way, I was doing a lot of home-based work and it was getting heavy. And I decided, so I moved more into coaching. And specializing with relationships and couples. And kind of, you know, the difference for that is if I work with couples on relationship issues, if I see an issue of mental illness, depression, anxiety, you know, addiction, I refer the individual out for treatment on that issue while I work with the couple or the individuals on relationship issues. And I did a lot extensive training with the Relational Life Institute with Terry Real.
Right.
And so that's a lot of my training and background. I am, you know, for the past, I don't know how many years, I am doing a lot of work with couples and groups all over. So I'm a lot of Zoom since COVID. I shut down my office and everything's like, you know, in Zoom. So I have most of my clients are really, you know, out of state or somewhere out of the country, which has been fun and freeing. And so that's what I'm doing. Oh, and I have to say one other thing. I'm also really, really these past several years on kind of a mission to change our culture around the relationship paradigm that we've, you know, lived with for so many years, almost since the beginning of time. And so I'm really on a mission to creating a radically new relationship paradigm for all of us to follow, because it just seems like in our world, whether it's politically or teams or couples, we're going on old rules that are really harming all of us. So that's my other shift, which is what brought me into the defensiveness as well.
Okay. So what is the new rules or the paradigm shift for relationships? Why are we stuck in, I mean, what I see is more and more conflict and more defensiveness. I took your defensiveness training, which was really remarkable, and I've studied defensiveness and Gottman and Terry Real and all that, but something about doing it in a group was really sort of enlightening and gives you a different perspective on it. But what's this new paradigm shift, and why is it so vital right now in these times?
Well, for one, there's so much polarization, black or white, all or nothing, kind of a no holds barred type of idea that, you know, you harm me, I get to annihilate you, all of that right. stuff. The old paradigm of kind of patriarchy and power over, mm-hmm. and we just normalized a lot of things that, you know, women go along to get along, men toughen up.
Right.
Well, there's so much damage to that. And, you know, we talk a lot about the damage to women. We don't talk about the damage to men. And it's really one of the things that I'm seeing with men, that that whole, you know, gender-based training of suck it up, be strong, don't be a wimp.
Yeah.
Right. If people don't agree with you, you know, make them agree with you, which is all that aggression. What happens with that is, in some ways, we've created really fragile men. And what I mean by that is, we have taught women not to really challenge men. Men don't challenge men. And when men do get called out, it goes straight to their sense of self. And so we've created this kind of place where it makes it really difficult for men to take in feedback, for women to give it feedback. Women struggle with taking in feedback because of perfectionism and needing to be, you right. know, perfect. And so anyway, so there's that. And so the new paradigm, like, I see it as like four key pillars. And, you know, those key pillars, one is uncompromising safety, physically, emotionally, spiritually, sexually, and energetically. The other one is genuine equality, which is everybody, you're in a relationship, your thoughts, my thoughts, your fears, your feelings, your opinions, your insights are just as important as mine, and mine are just as important as yours, regardless of who's, you know, making the money, who's staying at home, whatever's happening. We are all equally worthy and valued in how we approach each other. The third one is courageous accountability.
Mm.
And that courageous accountability is having the courage to own your own behaviors and the impact of those behaviors on others, while also having the courage to hold others accountable for their own behaviors.
Right.
And then the last one is humane kindness. And humane kindness in the closest relationships moves to cherishing. I think the old paradigm, there's this kind of idea that you get to let your hair down when you're home. So we bring our best selves to strangers right. on the street, and we, right? And then the kind of glue that puts all of this together is reciprocity. Every relationship in your life is two ways, that both of you are giving and both of you are receiving. It's not a one way, one person's giving and the other is taking. And I think that the old paradigm was a lot about, you know, one, you know, women serving, right? And men being served, men protecting, and women take. And so this is really about reciprocity in all areas. Like, you know, we're a team. We're not, you know, we're a partnership, not a parentship.
Those,
so that's the new paradigm.
Those old rules don't work. Those old archetypes, right? Like,
no.
Of what a man is and what a woman is. And that's all shifting.
Yeah. One of the things that's heartbreaking to me about men, and it really drives me crazy, like, with young boys, this whole idea of man up, suck it up, don't be a baby, don't be a wuss. Well, how the hell do you think boys are going to do that without, they have to shut down and block and not allow themselves to feel, right?
Right. Yeah.
Because they're human. Of course they feel. So they have to numb out. They got to shut that down. They also have to shut down their level of compassion for others, because if I let in your pain, it's going to be very hard for me to suck it up and be tough and be strong. And then these men get in marriages and their wives are like, oh, I feel lonely and you don't know how to emotionally meet me. And it's like, well, yeah, because our culture, these cultural messages and this old paradigm is crazy. And then when we teach women to put the needs and wants of others before themselves and don't right. rock the boat and be nice, they just kind of try to nice their partners into treating them better. And that stunts both the men's growth, the women's growth, whoever your partner is, you know, and it's wreaked havoc on so many families and generations.
Okay. I want to take a second. If you're just tuning in late today, please note that today's episode of Line One is pre-recorded and we won't be accepting listener questions. My guest today is Lisa Merlot-Booth. She's joined us to talk about the destructive power of defensiveness on intimate partner relationships and to help us learn how defensiveness shows up in our own lives. Okay. So if we're talking about defensiveness and can you define what that is? Because if I get attacked, I'm going to have a natural response to fight, to flee, right? That natural sort of primitive brain defend ourselves. So, and it's not just a physical attack. The threats right. aren't just physical, and usually in relationships they aren't.
Right, right. So the way I define it is a knee-jerk self-protective response to feedback that avoids taking responsibility for one's actions and their impact.
Okay.
We defend, our defensiveness is we often see feedback as an attack. Just because you see it as an attack doesn't make an attack make it an attack. And what I say to, you know, when I'm doing the course and what I say to clients is we miss the richness of feedback. Feedback is a gift. Right. And when you don't have trust in your relationship, or if you're constantly assuming that your partner is out to get you,
right,
you're missing the opportunity for you to take in feedback that's super important and that growth. And so you're just going to block it.
Yeah. And blocking it is the defensiveness, right? I heard you once say there really is no need for defensiveness. Like it's not necessary in relationships. Either the feedback is accurate and applicable and you can take responsibility and make changes, or it's misguided and misdirected. But isn't that, I guess people get defensive in both situations, but it's harder to take feedback that's maybe somebody's misinterpreted something or they didn't understand your words. And they have it wrong, and you just want to say, no, 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 you don't get it.
Well, when somebody is coming to you in a place of upset, it's not really about you. It's about them. It's about their feelings. It's about, you know, whether they misinterpreted it or not, they're hurt by it or they're bothered by it or something's going on. And when you are trying to be like, wait, I didn't do that, or well, look at what you do. All of that, that's about protecting me versus building we. And
right.
yeah. And so that's where we get caught up. And you want to figure out, look, am I about building this relationship? That doesn't mean you're going to cop to something you didn't do. It does mean you have to get out of your story and actually listen to the other person and not assume their feedback is an attack on you.
Right. And it so often feels that way when you're, as a relationship gets further and further into this negativity and criticism and defensiveness, it feels that way. And you feel like I have to defend it. I have to prove that I'm a good guy, right? Or I'm a, you know, a good wife or whatever it is.
Right. Well, it's funny. Part of that, you know, there's kind of, I talk about three different defensiveness archetypes,
right?
And so one of the archetypes is the storyteller, which is what you were just saying. Like, I have to show, you have to see that I'm a good person. You have to see that I don't have bad intentions, that I meant to do that. Like, can you just see that? That's coming from your insecurity. That's coming from you, like needing to prove something to them, right?
Not wanting them to think that about you or see right. you in that way. Like, no, I didn't do that. That's not what
right.
I meant.
Right. And just because they're upset about something doesn't necessarily mean that they think you're a bad person. It may mean I'm upset because the way you said that hurt my feelings. It may mean that I'm like overwhelmed and I really would like it if you would, you know, help clean the kitchen with me. It's not that you are a horrible human being. You're selfish. It just is. This is what I need. And when we get defensive, you know, we're in psychological boundary failure. Right.
Okay.
So the first sign that you're in defense, that you're in boundary failure, is you're defensive. Because one, if it's true for you and you did do that and that behavior happened, why are you defending it?
Right.
It's true. And two, if it's not true for you, why are you getting so defensive about it? Like, it's not true. Just kind of get curious, get about, ask their story, or maybe it's like they're hurt, but if they say you never do dot dot dot, and just yesterday, let's say you never give me coffee, and just yesterday you brought them coffee,
right?
You know that the never isn't true, right? So block out the never. Has there been a time where you haven't brought them coffee and they were upset? Then cop to it, own it, hold yourself in warm regard. And now the other partner feels heard, but you going to, that's not true. You know, I brought you coffee on Monday, you know, it's like, you're missing the point. You're missing the gist. And now you're all about me and you've left me on an island all by myself.
Right.
So that you can make yourself feel better.
And you've just told me that my feelings are wrong. They're not correct. They are somehow misguided. You mentioned something really important. You mentioned holding yourself in warm regard. What do you mean by that as far as in this situation?
So somebody, my actions doesn't change my worth. I'm inherently worthy, regardless of whether I fail a test or I am messy or I snapped at my partner.
Forgot my
all
kids
those
at
behaviors
school.
Are not okay. What?
Forgot my kids at school, left them.
Forgot
there.
My kids at school, right? You know? So I, in those moments, I want to feel like genuine remorse. I want to be like, oh my gosh, my bad. I'm so sorry. And then I'm going to like repair it. There's a hard line between that and, oh my gosh, I suck. What's wrong with me? I'm a bad person. And so when somebody's giving you feedback and when you own it and you actually have the courage to take accountability for it, you also internally want to be like, and I'm enough and I matter. Like, and I have inherent worth just as much as they do, even though I messed up on this one.
Yeah. All right. The other piece that you mentioned there that I really, that is critical for this is validation and curiosity. And I use that a lot in my own work is really like, how do you validate your partner's feelings? And how is that different? Maybe you can explain that because that's an important piece. How is that different than saying you're right? Right? Because maybe you didn't do it, but you can still validate even if you think they're wrong. Why does that matter?
Because they need to feel heard. And if you, and validating isn't, I hear that you're sad. I hear that that hurts you. That's not validating. That's a kind of really distancing move that's still protecting you. It's keeping it out there. It's, you know, validating the healing piece. If you really want to like build the relationship and build connection, conflict is your pathway to do that, right?
Okay.
And so if my partner says something to me and they're like, I'm really hurt, like you snapped at me yesterday, I'm really hurt, and I'm thinking, I did not snap, I'm in my story. If they say you snapped at me yesterday, I can, and I'm not sure that's true, I can ask them, so what do you mean I snapped at you? When I said this, you just went, okay. And then I need to be humble enough. Let's say I did it. The validating and the real healing happens when I talk about the impact of that, not just saying, you know, oh my gosh, you're right, I did. It's, you know what? You're so right. I did do that. I'm really sorry. And I saw you bristle. And I can see how it felt like I didn't care about your feelings in that moment at all. And I was only in, you know, kind of in my story and focusing on my stress. I'm going to really work on that. So I did a couple things. I put myself in their shoes, how it might feel for them, right? And some of that is from me listening to them. And I told them how I'm going to fix it. Mm-hmm. I'm going to repair it. So now the next time I'm stressed, this is the other part of the repair, and they call me something, I'm going to really take a breath before I snap. Or if I forget and I snap, I'm going to say, oh, hold on, wait. Right. I totally just snapped. Let me redo that. I'm sorry about that. And now they feel super validated. They feel heard, and they know that they can talk to me and we can actually come to a solution. We can solve issues. It's not going to be a waste of time.
The big part too, I think, is your partner not feeling dismissed,
yes.
Right? Their feelings. And you know, you talk about the impact of validation for kids. When kids are crying and they're scared about something and you say, you don't need to be scared about that. That's silly. You're right. Just telling them that their feelings aren't real, that those sensations that they're having, it may be from something that's irrational, but to help their feelings are real. That's critical.
Yes. Right. And you're not the judge and jury.
Right. Yeah, right? There's two people.
Yeah. Who am I to say that you shouldn't be sad, scared, whatever? That, like, it's a pretty grandiose thing for me to do. One of the other archetypes does that. It's called the CEO, right? The CEO, their defensiveness is driven a lot by, wait, the facts have to matter. Like, you know, it's important. And so the facts have to matter. And it has to make sense to me. Your upset has to make sense to me. And if it doesn't, then I'm going to dismiss it. I'm going to minimize it. That's silly, because what's driving it is I have to know that this makes sense in my world, not in your world, in mine.
Right. Completely in your own story.
Yeah. Completely in your own
story. All right. We are up. We're just a little bit past our first break. So if you're tuning in late, please note that today's conversation is pre-recorded and we won't be able to accept phone calls or emails. After a short break, we'll return for more of our conversation about defensiveness with Lisa Merlo Booth. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Today's episode of Line One, Your Health Connection, is a rebroadcast of a previous episode. We will not be taking phone calls or emails during today's program.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you're just tuning in, my guest today is Lisa Merlo Booth. Lisa is joining us to talk about the destructive power defensiveness has on intimate partner relationships. She's also sharing tips on how to recognize how defensiveness shows up in our own lives and how we can learn to recognize it and manage it better. All right, before the break, you had mentioned, I want to remind folks we are, this show is recorded, so we won't be accepting phone calls or emails today. Before the break, we talked a little bit about the second archetype, the CEO. Can you just go through those three archetypes and how they show up?
Great. So the first archetype was the storyteller.
Right.
So let me just hold on. The storyteller, the CEO, and the peacemaker. And so the peacemaker, what they're driven by, a need to avoid conflict, to have things be okay. What they often do if somebody gives them feedback is they may collapse. They may be like, oh my God, I'm so stressed. Why are you talking to me about this right now? Or they may say, you're going to have to edit this for a minute.
Well, there's no editing, but...
So the other one they might do is to say, you know, oh, I guess I just suck. I guess I'm just, you know, like that.
The shame spiral kind of place.
Right. So that's the peacemaker. Like, stop. It's too much. I can't handle it. Why are you doing this to me? Can we just like be positive? The next one is the storyteller. The storyteller is often, I did that because of this, or wait, I didn't mean to do that. Do you know all the things I do for you? And that's driven by, you have to see me as a good person.
Right?
You got to recognize that. I'm a good person. I don't have bad intentions. And then the next one is the CEO. And the CEO is, this is right or this is wrong. If it wouldn't bother me, it shouldn't bother you. And so that's what, you know, they're always looking through it from that lens.
Okay, so you have a couple, they come into your office and they sit down, they start doing their thing. You quickly pick up that, I mean, there's a lot of defensiveness in every relationship, it seems like.
Yeah.
It's a universal problem, especially when people start getting in these conflict spirals. So how do you start working with people? How do you address the defensiveness and begin to, and help people? If I want to learn more defensiveness and I want to, you know, figure out how it shows up in my world, what do I do?
So first I want them to recognize how they personally defend. What's their move? What do they do? Right? People tend to favor a certain way of they defend. Do they spin it? Do they justify? What do they do? And so once they start recognizing how they defend, then they can actually change it. I also work with couples around the, one of the key pieces around defensiveness is story. You have to figure out whose story do I need to be in when, right? And here's a quick, easy template for you. The person who comes to the conversation first in a place of upset, whether they're giving you feedback, they're hurt, their feelings, everybody is in their story. And they're in their story all the way through actually healing it.
To the repair piece.
And what I see with couples all the time, which is so hard and breaks connection, is a lot of men will say, oh my gosh, but she's always coming to me. I don't, like, this stuff doesn't bother me. Why, you know, why do I have to do it? And then they bring up their upset when their wives are coming to them complaining about something. Then the men will be like, oh, well, I don't like it when you do this. And
right.
So it's a piggyback upset rather than repairing her upset and then at another time bringing their upset to the table. So when I see that happening, I'm like, whoa, wait, you're in your story now. And what you did is you just stole the mic from her. And now you want her to meet you in your problem. And then we have to stop it. Stop. What did she just say? What do you think's going on? Why is she feeling that? And then they have to own it, acknowledge the impact, and repair it. And if they get defensive, what you have to do is, I call it the 3R. Well, there's the template.
Okay.
Prentice. Let me leave that for now.
All right, so the template is being in someone else's story, really hearing their hurt and upset, validating that, asking questions like, you know, even if you don't understand it, you can just say, I don't understand, help me understand why you're hurt. I don't want you to feel that way, right?
Right. And you're asking that question with a good spirit.
Right.
I'm genuinely curious. I'm not trying to, you know, prove you wrong. I'm not trying to minimize what you're saying. like, help me understand. So tell me what was going on for you with that. Right. If you think of it, SOAR, S-O-A-R, story, uh-huh. You're in the person who initiated the conversation story, own it. I did any piece that you did, any piece. If you didn't do it today, but you've done it before, you're going to say, you know, I can't do that. Absolutely. And then you're going to do that. And then you're going to acknowledge the impact. What's the impact of your behavior on them? And if you were listening to your partner, you'll know what that is. And then repair it, which is, you know, I'm really sorry that I did that. Here's what I'm going to do differently. And then do it differently.
That's the key. Can you talk a little bit about the damage of repeated injuries, right? Like, I mean, there is something about like saying I'll fix something and not fixing it. And something happens over and over again. And then the repair becomes sort of moot, right?
Yes. Yeah. So when somebody continually says, I'm sorry, I won't do that again. I'm sorry, I won't do that again. I'm sorry, I won't do that again. And it keeps happening. What they're showing you is that it's going to keep happening and that you can't trust that that change is going to happen. So now what you have to figure out is, okay, what do I need to do with that? Right? I can't control the other person. The only place I have power is in my actions, my reactions, what I say, what I do. I can't control what they say, what they do, how they react. So if I ask my husband, you know, to change something, right? And like, let's say I say, you know, listen, you've been really short with me, and this has been going on for several months. And he says, I'm sorry, I'll stop it. And then he keeps doing it. So then what I talk about is, you know, name it, ask for it, set it, ramp it. So I'm going to sit him down then, not in the heat of the moment, and I'm going to have a longer conversation. This is what's going on. This is what I've asked. This is how it's impacting us. And this is what I'm going to do. Then I'm going to, like, maybe I'm going to say, every time you snap at me, whether it's in front of our kids or it's in public, it's out to dinner with our friends, I'm going to say right then, don't snap at me, right? Or I'm going to say, whoa, that was rude, right? Or whoa, that hurt. I'm going to address it every single time. And then I do that for, you know, 3 weeks, whatever. And it still doesn't change. Now I'm going to ramp up. Now the seriousness of it. So now it goes from, I'm going to name when you do it. Now I'm going to come up with a more serious limit. And that more serious limit, I'm going to go incrementally all the way to, you know, defensiveness is a relationship killer. So if ultimately they, no matter how I approach it, no matter what I say, we get professional help. We separate, we whatever it is, right? We do all these things and they're still defensive. Ultimately, I'm going to say, you know what? I need to leave the relationship if it's a deal breaker for me.
Right.
Because with defensiveness, what happens is I know if every time I go to my partner, 90% of the time I go to my partner, they get defensive. There's no way we can fix it. I won't get heard. That behavior is not going to change. So I either need to stuff it and hold it and get more and more resentful because I'm not getting what I want, or I need to say, this won't work. I can't do it. I can't do it. And so you may need to walk away if a behavior keeps happening and happening. So that's one thing. If it's really, you got to figure out, is that behavior that's not changing a non-negotiable? If it's something that you're not, you know, it's not going to break the relationship and they're not giving it to you, you may have to grieve it. It right. may be I'm getting enough over here that I'm going to grieve this. And maybe if my partner's not really, I don't know, they don't like going to movies with me, I'm going to start going to movies with my friends and I'm going to be sad I don't go with them. But, you know.
All right. Can you talk a little bit about some of the other, you said defensiveness is a relationship killer, and I want to kind of tie it in with some of the other ones. Can you talk about those relationship killers, the other ones, the four horsemen, and how they kind of play in, and we'll tie them into defensiveness?
Mm-hmm. So, criticism. One of the things that can happen with criticism is if you feel like your partner is constantly, you know, criticizing, telling you what's wrong, when they start coming to the table, you might get defensive because you feel like it's a constant thing, right? And this goes back to my point before. What I would say about that is you still don't have the right to get defensive when they're coming to you. What you have to do is you have to have a separate conversation, not in response to them, you know, complaining about something, and you're going to have a separate conversation with them about their criticism. That's going to be your upset with them. And then they have to be in your story. They have to own it. They have to acknowledge it. They have to repair it. Right. And what's super important, the rules for one are the rules for both. So criticism is one of the four horsemen. Another one is stonewalling, and stonewalling is, it's like shutting down, not having conversation, just like refusing to do it. And with stonewalling, what's really hard is if you're not going to let me have the conversation, right? And we're not going to be able to talk about it, well, then we have what we have. Now you're asking me to assess our relationship as is, because you won't work with me on anything because you keep stonewalling me and you keep saying you can't talk about it. And so that's a tough one, just like defensiveness. It's like, I got nowhere to move here.
I have couples that sometimes won't talk for days. They just it's just completely, one will stonewall the other and won't even speak, right?
That's emotionally abusive.
Yeah.
It's emotionally abusive. You don't get to do that. You get to set a limit. You get to, you know, talk to them about what's going on. You get to take a time out. You get to take space. If you're you're not talking to somebody for, you know, one day, 2 days, it's like basically saying they're not worth your breath. Like, you're not even acknowledging their humanity. That is super emotionally abusive. And then the last one is contempt.
Mm-hmm.
And contempt happens with defensiveness. Like, often if you're defensive, you can either spew that at the other person. You know, you can use contempt is that I'm better than you, I'm looking down my nose at you. It's judgment, it's that disgust, right? And it can also be on the person who's giving the feedback. Like, if, you know, if I go to my husband and I'm like, you left the kitchen in the sink for the 10th time, right? Like, I'm contemptuous,
right?
And I'm not clean on my end, and I'm always responsible. If I'm going to give feedback, I'm responsible for giving that with a clean energy. And what he does with it on his end is his work, but he's also responsible for giving me feedback with a clean energy.
And what I've noticed is that criticism and defensiveness, I mean, all of these sort of, as a relationship gets further and further into, you know, a dark place and a tough place, these all start to creep up. And criticism and defensiveness, I've seen them just become these huge beasts, right, in a relationship that play off of each other. And a lot of men, and I don't like to generalize, and we're talking men and women, there's a lot of different variations, but men seem to like not, some of the men, a lot of the men I work with don't speak up, and they don't have an ask. They don't have a complaint. They just kind of roll along, and some of the women becomes this critical thing. And then the men say, do exactly what you talked about, make the list of all the things they did and get very, very angry. So how do you stop that cycle?
Well, see, this is one of the things, you know, that I was talking about at the beginning, that really, of course, men don't have a hard time asking for their wants and needs. They're told not to feel them, not to know them, right? And so, men, when you shut down yourself, you don't know what's going on. Like, they know that they get annoyed or bothered or triggered when their wife complains to them. But many men will tell me, it's okay. I just want her to stop being unhappy. And so I have to work with the men. Hold on, slow down, tune in. What are you feeling? You have the right to ask for your needs and wants. However, if you don't know what those needs and wants are, you can't ask for them. Hmm. And right now you're just getting triggered, and she can't give you any feedback without you taking it personally. With the wives, with women, this is women or men, and particularly more so women, if they tend to be really critical, they often tend to be very perfectionistic, right?
Right.
And
right.
So they're also as hard on themselves as they are on others. And so I'm really working. That criticism is often about control and fear.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You got to work with the women around, you know, you don't get to micromanage people. Let him do it his way, right? You have to tune in and not always be tweaking everything. And that's, you know, that's a process.
Yeah. And I think people kind of fall into these patterns innocently, right? I mean, at the beginning, we bring our own stuff to the table, and you have an ADD or ADHD husband and a wife who's very anxious, right? And then you have one that's worrying about a lot of things and the other one that's not. And you have something that just over 10 or 15 years continues to build, right?
Right. Well, and I would say it builds more and more because we don't have a template for conflict. And so a lot of people avoid it, or they like just get reactive in it, but they don't really sit down and work through it. And so it grows, it grows, it grows. You get more and more resentful. They get more and more reactive with each other.
Right.
And it's because 10, 20 years ago, they weren't dealing with it in the moment and really working through it. And I don't think we have very many role models in our world anywhere, and certainly not our leaders, right? Like, we don't have role models where we can look at how do you work through conflict. And, you know, I want to just address something about feedback that people don't get. You know, I said earlier that conflict is the pathway to intimacy. That's your pathway to connection. If you are not having hard conversations, you can't have intimacy,
okay.
Right? You can't.
Right.
And so the feedback is a gift for several reasons. One, it's operating instructions. I am literally giving you operating instructions around how I can feel closer to you.
This is what I need. Yeah.
This is what I need. And if you give this to me, oh my gosh, I'm going to love you up. This is what I need. I'm giving you operating instructions. The second thing is, I am letting you know what's going on in my mind. I'm letting you know what I'm thinking. You don't have to guess. I'm telling you, right? And if I'm thinking this and feeling this and giving you feedback, somebody else in your life may also be seeing it and feeling it. They're just not courageous enough to give it to you.
Hmm.
So it gives you insight into what may also be going on, right? With feedback, you know, I don't know if you were in this class. One of the classes was really, it was so great. We were talking about, you know, all right, how do you handle this? And one of the men was like, you know, you're telling me how to like work through conflict and how to respond when my wife comes to me. I told her I'm taking this class. And she said, I don't care. I'm not going to give you any feedback anymore.
Hmm.
He's like, what do I do with that? The other gift of feedback is if they're taking the time to give it to you, they're telling you that you are important enough to them that they are going to take the time to give it to you. And they're going to risk that vulnerability to have that conversation with you. If you keep getting defensive and you're going to lose that gift. And now you don't know what she's thinking or he's thinking. You don't know how to fix it. You don't know.
Once the feedback stops, that's when you really need to worry, right?
Yes. And that's when a lot of men are like, oh, thank God, things are good.
Yeah.
When your wife quiets down, you should worry.
when we come back, I'd like to get into like how can people begin to do this at home? What is that template that you talk about? And we'll only have about 10 minutes left because we're kind of past our break here. But if you're just tuning in, my guest is Lisa Merlo Booth. We are discussing the destructive power defensiveness has on intimate partner relationships. And she's sharing some tips on how we can recognize how defensiveness shows up in our own lives and how we can better manage it. After a short break, we'll be back for more of our conversation about defensiveness with Lisa Merlo Booth. I'm Prentice Pemberton, and you're listening to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media.
You're listening to Line One from Alaska Public Media. You can find Line One on alaskapublic.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Did you know 100 years ago, the chances of a baby dying in Alaska before their first birthday was almost 10%? Because of advances in public health like sanitation, access to clean water, vaccines for children, and access to health care in rural communities, the chances of dying are now less than 1%. To learn more about what the Alaska Department of Health is doing to improve Alaskans' health for the next 100 years, visit health.alaska.gov. This message sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health.
Today's episode of Line One, Your Health Connection, is a rebroadcast of a previous episode. We will not be taking phone calls or emails during today's program.
Welcome back to Line One, Your Health Connection on Alaska Public Media. I am your host, Prentice Pemberton. If you are just tuning in today, please note that today's episode of Line One is pre-recorded and we will not be accepting listener phone calls or emails. My guest today is Lisa Merlo Booth. Lisa is joining us to talk about the destructive power of defensiveness as it pertains to intimate relationships and to help us learn how defensiveness shows up in our own lives and how we can better manage it. All right, so we've covered a lot about defensiveness, and I am wondering if somebody is like really having a, well, I got a couple of questions. One is, if someone's listening to this and they have a very defensive partner or who doesn't want to go into therapy, isn't interested in talking about it, is there a way for one person to shift this dynamic? Can they set boundaries? Can they start to really ramp up the pressure if they're really thinking like, I can't do this anymore?
Yes, I have a saying, changing me changes we. Changing me will change my marriage. Changing me will change my partner. Changing me will change my life. I don't know how, but it will change. It'll force a change in the system, right? And so this goes back to the, you know, one of the things they can do is make sure that first and foremost, you have an honest, heartfelt conversation about the impact of defensiveness on you, right? And how it's impacting you and how it's impacting the relationship and what you want. So too many people complain about it. You're so defensive, but they don't sit them down and have that conversation. Then what I would say is it's that name it, ask for it, set it, ramp it. So what are you asking them to do? And then you want to, what are you going to do? Every time they get defensive, you could be like, and it depends on how their defensiveness is. Like, let's say what they often do is they spin it, right? I say I'm hurt about this. And they're like, well, I was hurt about that. One thing you can do is I hear that and I'm happy to have that conversation after we have this conversation. So okay. Bring it back, see what they do.
This is about me, not you right now. I'm happy to listen to your upset later.
Right. If somebody, you know, if they're just like, I didn't do that. You can be like low and slow, like take a breath, slow down the room, right? Just be like, so let me try that again. And my ask is that rather than you quickly saying what you didn't do, if you can take it in and acknowledge what maybe you did do, right? Or you can also go to somebody, if they're more often than not, they get defensive. You can say, listen, I want to talk to you about something. My ask is that you not respond right now, that you take it in and you wait 24 hours and then come back. Are you willing to do that? Get the agreement. Are you willing to do that, right? And then, so those are some, you know, three things you can try. Those are some quick tips. And if you're trying, and consistently, not just one and done, right? Do it
right.
for several weeks. Try these moves. Work on your end to clean it up. Get your end clean. And then you have to start figuring out how big of an issue is this? How much is this damaging our relationship? Do we need to get into couples work, right? What do we need to do? If you've been in couples work and it's not working, do you need to separate? What do you need to do? So you're always just focus on you. Too many times couples, individuals, they try to change their partner.
Yeah.
You don't have power there. So just focus, okay, what's my move now? How does it feel? When I do this, how do I feel? Do I feel good? Do I feel grounded, powerful strength, or what? And so focus on your moves and be honest. That's the first move if your partner is.
So if your partner's not really willing to participate, then it sounds like you can, it's important for you to set boundaries and really know what your ask is and then just mm-hmm. stick to that. And it may mean that if your partner is unwilling to change, it may mean that the relationship doesn't get fixed.
Right. Absolutely.
Which is,
and then you figure out, is that enough? Like, what do you want to do with that?
Is this what I can live with? Right.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. If a couple is struggling with this, and they're trying and they're working on it, like, what are some things, like, how can they, what is the template for this? Is there a back and forth? Is there like, okay, I do this, then you do this? Is there a template? What is the template for having these conversations?
Well, the first thing is recognize, each partner has to recognize when they're getting defensive. So like, do your internal work. And I say the three R's. So recognize, reset, receive, right? Recognizes, Hold on. I'm really triggered right now. Give me a moment. Right. And then take a breath. If you're the one who struggles with the defensiveness, take a breath.
How do I know if I'm defensive? What are my signals?
Well, your body's tense. You're probably talking really, you're answering really, really fast. You're not slowing it down. Your partner may be repeatedly trying to tell you something, and so that might, you may see it through them. You may have your own little statements that you make, which is, I was just trying, or I didn't mean that. Like, so just start paying attention to you. What do you say? What do you do? You can ask your partner, hey, what do you notice when I get defensive, right? But you tend to get louder and faster if you're a hot defensive person. You may, if you are more of the peacemakers, you may shut down and silence and, you know, kind of go inward and saying things like, I guess I'm just terrible, or I guess, you know, or I can't handle it. Anytime, kind of just listen for those little clues.
I tell people to look for the whoosh. Like this,
yeah.
This flush of energy or hot, like, or anger, right? Yeah. That's
right.
You can feel it physiologically, can't you?
Yeah, you get a quick trigger. Like, it's, you're triggered, right? And your move is going to be different, but you'll feel it. It's just like your automatic response, knee jerk, before you're ever even thinking. It's like just comes right over you when you feel that. And that's when you gotta like take a breath, slow it down.
I was watching the news last night, and it was some Republicans and some Democrats, and they're on this panel, and they were going back and forth, and everything that, if anybody brought something up about one candidate, the other one said, well, what about,
yes,
like, they didn't answer the question. They just completely blew it off and went right to the, well, what about you moment. That's one of the moves, right?
Yes, that it's so pervasive. It's, you know, in politics, it's ridiculous. Yeah. Whose story are you in?
And it's so powerful, that accountability piece that you talk about a lot, being accountable and really, I mean, what it does, I think this validation and curiosity, what it does is it makes your partner think they matter.
Yes, right. don't tell me you love me. And then every time I come to you in upset, you say it's not my fault, it's not your fault, or you didn't do it, or I'm too crazy, like I'm too sensitive. That's not love.
So if I want to come to you, Lisa, and I have a complaint about something you've done to me that was hurtful, how do I do that if you usually get defensive with me? How do I come to you and say I want to? You talk about a soft startup.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. You know, come to me with a soft startup. Like, hey, I just, you know, first off, let me just say I love you and I'm coming to this because I want us to get closer, right? And then also, and I'm asking, can you please hear this and, you know, either sit with it for a day and come back, or can you hear this and lead with any acknowledgement you're able to do first? Are you able to do that? Like, I'm going to, you know, put that out and see what they do.
And then me, or you as the receiver, like if I'm the receiver of the feedback, then I have to take a breath and be ready to really hear.
Yes. Like you're a reporter getting the story.
Okay.
Right? I want to know what was it like for you? What did it feel like? What are you feeling? What did you think? Right? How is it, you know, how are you feeling about me because of that? Like, I just want to get into your story so that I can better able to meet you in that and help, right? I want to heal it, just like I want you to do that with me. You know, one of the things that was really fun about the class is, you know, one of the things that we would do is we'd be like, okay, think of a time when you got defensive, and then we'd swap the role play. So they had to feel what it felt like, you know, which is good, you know.
It's really powerful to switch roles. And it feels, I've done those role plays and it feels really odd to take that other role on because it's so foreign to us, and it illustrates how automatic and deep these things are in us, right?
Right. If you remember that, the rules for one are the rules for both.
Mm-hmm.
I am just as responsible as my husband is to, when he comes to me with feedback, my whole job is to, like, have him feel heard, for me to acknowledge the impact, and for me to repair it. That's my only job. Nowhere in that job is it about me trying to get him to see my stuff.
Yeah, you talked about being, you're the customer service rep, right?
Yeah.
You're just listening to the complaint or to the concern.
Right. You are at the customer service window, and that's it. And you will have your day too. It's just not today.
It's not your time. And people need to learn to express their feelings and talk about their concerns. So you got about 10 seconds. What are your final thoughts on defensiveness?
Conflict is your pathway to intimacy. Every time you get defensive, you are pulling yourself out of connection, and you want to make sure, you want to get clarity about your goal.
All right. Thank you. I enjoyed the conversation very much, Lisa. I appreciate you being here with us today.
Thank you.
All right. My thanks also to Line One producer Madeline Rose, and to for all of us at Line One. Thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to listen in. Until next time, have a good day, Alaska.
Line One is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants, and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Learn more about Line One and listen online at alaskapublic.org.
This program was brought to you by Jim and Shirley Brown's Apartments, located in Sandpoint above Trident Seafoods and the Boat Harbor, featuring two-bedroom apartments on a month-to-month basis. For more information, call Jim Brown at 386-6050.
KSDP, 830 AM in Sandpoint, K201DA, 88.1 FM in King Cove, KOLD, 91.9 FM in Cold Bay, KFPS, 88.1 FM in Falls Pass, and KKQA 88.1 FM in Akrutan, Alaska.
It's time now for your weather, tide predictions, and sunrise and sunset, starting with your coastal water forecast, courtesy of the National Weather Service of Anchorage, Alaska. From Sidkenap to Castle Cape, small craft advisory through Thursday. Today, southeast winds